Jazz Academy, a program of the Department of Theater and Music in the College of Architecture, Design, and the Arts, is a place where students grade 5 through 12 develop skills and knowledge about music and performance. Taught by UIC faculty and CJP artists and teachers, this two-week summer program fills a need for music education for children and teens in Chicago area schools. It also introduces participants to campus life, which helps break down perceived barriers to higher education and enhances the chances for lifelong success. The summer camp is directed by UIC faculty members and CJP Artistic Director Orbert Davis, and we're pleased to be joined by Christine Mary Dunford, who is the Associate Chair today. The students who will be performing for you come from high schools throughout the Chicago area. Before they begin, we're going to ask each of them to tell us their name and which school they're associated with. Well, welcome everyone.
So today we will be playing Footprints by Wayne Shorter. Today. Thank you.
I was hoping for more, but that was really good. That sure beats a PowerPoint presentation.
That's so true.
We all enjoyed it. Saw Jim sitting there thinking, well, in a different life at a different time, maybe that might have been him. And I was so delighted that Pam was here to let me know when to applaud, because I went to the symphony one time, and I was the guy in the upper balcony going like this when everybody else was quiet. So
that used to be okay. Years ago, it was acceptable.
Yeah, apparently.
I was delighted to see two of them are from Shy Arts, because that's something I'm very involved in. I was on one of the founding members of the board, and we just graduated the first class in June, and the graduation ceremony was at the Harris Theater, and Herbie Hancock was the commencement speaker.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So these kids come from all over Chicago. It's the first public high school for the arts in Chicago, and it's really an exciting thing. And a number of the graduates are going to both Urbana and UIC. Those top schools for them.
Great. Well, keep the pipeline open for us, Pam, so thank you.
Is it called Shires?
You know, we're sort of on a roll this afternoon with fun presentations. We started with that. Now we're going to hear from the Illini 4000 for Cancer. We're going to invite Jamie Kelleher, who's the Director of Information, and Tori Cross, the current Assistant Director of the Portage Project, and incoming President, to present information on the Illini 4000 for Cancer Project. Jamie is a recent Urbana graduate in material science and engineering. Jamie joined the Illini 4000 in 2009, rode in the summer of 2010, and was the ride leader for the 2012 ride. Jamie has been working on the Illini 4000 Board of Directors since 2011 as Director of Information and is serving as interim president. Gregory Colton leads the 2013 ride. I'm not sure everyone understands the distances involved, so they're not as impressed as I am. But I'm sure as soon as you tell them how far you guys go, we'll all be really impressed.
Yeah, thanks so much. And first of all, we'd just like to say thank you very much for inviting us here. We really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you guys this afternoon. My name is Jamie Kelleher. Like I said, I'm a recent graduate from the University of Illinois. I rode for the first time with the Illini 4000 in summer of 2010, and then I returned as the ride leader in summer of 2012. And this is Tori, and so we're going to talk to you a little bit about what the Illini 4000 is and what we do today. So the Illini 4000 for Cancer is a nonprofit organization dedicated to documenting the American cancer experience, raising funds for cancer research and patient support services, and spreading awareness for the fight against cancer through annual cross-country bike rides. So to get a little more into that, we're a 501c3. We were founded at UIUC by two students in 2006, and we're a registered student organization there. We're entirely student-run, so we have a nine-member board of directors that works day in and day out to accomplish both our long-term goals of one day ending cancer and our short-term goals of how we're going to put together our bike ride and how we're going to do all of this. So every summer, we send approximately 25 students from New York to San Francisco on a cross-country bicycle ride. So we are the Illini 4000 to signify 4,000 miles, and it's a really great ride. So who we support. So since the organization began, we've always donated money to the American Cancer Society and Camp Kesem, Illinois. Probably most of you have heard of the American Cancer Society. They're a great organization. They raise a lot of money, and they're really good at doing that, and then distributing it to researchers who can do a lot of great things with that. We also made our initial donation to Camp Kesem to start their chapter in Illinois. Camp Kesem is a camp for children whose parents have been affected by cancer, which is an entirely free camp for a week in the summer. There's chapters all over the country, and it allows parents to kind of have a week where, you know, they're free to go through their struggles, and the kids, they know their kids are safe and having fun and getting away from some of that stress at home. So like I said, our initial donation in 2007 was able to start the camp that we have at Illinois, another student organization, and we've been supporting them ever since. Additionally, after the first few years, we thought to ourselves, you know, we raise a lot of money and we put it to great places, but what else can we do with it? There have to be more great organizations that can do a lot of stuff with our money as well. So our board of directors did a lot of research, sat down for many long hours researching financial documents and just different, all kinds of information about what other charities we could donate to. And we came across the Damon Runyon Cancer Research Foundation. This is an organization based in New York City, and they fund a lot of new career scientists, a lot of new ideas, new research, scientists who are working on getting up off the ground, and they've had amazing success with what these scientists have been able to do. Additionally, we fund the Livestrong Foundation. This is part of our patient support services branch of what we give money to. And what Livestrong does is they connect people with organizations that can help them through their cancer experience. Anybody at any time can call Livestrong and say, I have cancer, and they will mail you for free a real thick guidebook of all the questions you should be asking and all kinds of information about how you can get through that experience. They're based in a low-income neighborhood in Austin, Texas. I was actually able to visit this past December, and they really do put their money where their mouth is when they say, we will help anybody. You walk in our doors and say, I want help, and they'll do that. For young people with cancer, for example, they talk to them about fertility options and ways that they can preserve that if their cancer treatment's gonna prevent that from being, from them to be able to have children in the future or something like that. So they're a really great organization, and we're really proud to be able to donate money to them. Additionally, starting 2 years ago, we donated a bit of money to a U of I at Urbana-Champaign researcher, Dr. Brendan Harley. He does cancer research on brain cells, and while we can't donate him huge grants of money, the money that we donate to him is really important to him because it's unrestricted funds. We say cancer research, but it's not towards any specific project. Probably a lot of you know that when looking for research money, it's very hard to get to begin with, and then when you have to convince them that your project is great and that you know what you're doing before anybody's going to give you money to do it. The money that we give him allows him to start new ideas, get that initial research off the ground so that he can go to American Cancer Society or somebody else and say, look at my initial research that I've been able to do. Now give me a lot more money to be able to fund that. And every year we get a tour of his lab, our whole team gets to see all of that, and it's really cool that we can see, you know, this is the project that we started, and he would not have been able to do this without the money that we donated to him. So every year we say that 75% of our funds will go to cancer research and 25% to patient support services. Beyond that, we don't say each year where exactly our money will go, but in the past years it has been these five organizations primarily. And since 2007, the initial ride, we've donated over $500,000. That's $518,000 so far, and we're looking to donate over $100,000 more this year.
So frequently, as a board of directors, we ask ourselves, why do we do this ride? If we simply did the fundraising, we would be able to donate more money, and we wouldn't have to go through all of the work to put on this cross-country ride. But everyone who rides with us has a reason. So in 2007, when our founders were trying to decide what exactly they wanted to do towards their fundraising for cancer research, they started the Portraits Project. which is our effort to document the American cancer experience. Because no matter where you go, someone has been affected by cancer. So what we do is we interview people who've been affected by cancer, whether it's a caregiver, a family member, a survivor, someone who's currently battling. No matter who it is, we want to hear their story. And we want to get an idea of what cancer means to people across this nation. And what we've learned is that it's really interesting because some people view cancer as something terrifying and horrible and synonymous with death. But we've found many other people who found cancer to be a gift or a friend or something that brought them closer to their family members. And we've really met tons of people. These are just four of the people that we met in between the two rides that we've done. And there are so many more that we've met.
One thing that's really cool about the Portraits Project is sometimes we get to where we're staying for the day and we have it planned ahead that we're going to interview some people from the church or school or what have you, wherever we're staying that evening. And other times it's, you know, we go to a gas station to get something to drink on the side of the road and we meet a homeless man and he tells us that he's had cancer. And we sit down with our video camera and we just ask him about his experience. So we've really been able to just paint a huge picture of different types of people, whether it's, you know, some rich executive in New York City or somebody living on a farm in the middle of Wyoming, everything. And it surprises you every day. I remember the first time that I was really, really connected with the Portraits Project was in summer of 2010. We were riding through Indiana, and I was riding with a group of seven girls. This is actually a picture on the bottom left. And we stopped at a flower shop in Greencastle, Indiana, to ask a woman if we could use the bathroom. And we walked inside, and, you know, she sees a bunch of sweaty girls wearing matching jerseys, and she just looked at us and said, "Tell me what you guys are doing." And we started to say, "Oh, we're biking across the country for cancer research." And she just said, "You're riding for me." And that was something that we were just so taken aback by. And we ended up spending about an hour with her talking about her experience and what that brought her and what we could learn from. And then, you know, later other days when it's hot or you're biking up a mountain for hours on end and you're just thinking, "Man, I trained in Central Illinois, I'm not ready for this." And you're having a hard time, you think, you know, "I'm gonna get to the top," and not everybody who has cancer knows that. So we draw a lot of inspiration from the Portraits Project along our ride, and we like to say that we leave an impact with the people that we meet along the way as well.
So currently there are 22 cyclists that are stationed in South Lake Tahoe, California. They are enjoying a day off where they get to do laundry and take showers for the first time in a week. And spend some time with each other and hopefully conduct more portraits as they meet people throughout the city. As of today, they've ridden 3,800 miles in 61 days. They have 6 days left. And they've raised over $110,000 since they started fundraising in November.
And today, as July 25th, we celebrate as Christmas in July and part of Illini 4000 tradition. So our team would like us to wish you guys a Merry I-4 Christmas today as they celebrate with their Secret Santa in South Lake Tahoe. But they will reach San Francisco on the 31st.
And they will be greeted by family and friends in the San Francisco University of Illinois Alumni Club, which provides them with a wonderful lunch and really takes care of us. And on that note, we really wouldn't be able to do this without the help of our community support as well as our university's support. This really wouldn't happen. So, do you guys have any questions? Yeah.
Just a suggestion. If you went west to east, you'd more likely have the wind behind you.
Yeah, there are kind of a lot of reasons for that.
Old people have to think about
this. There are a lot of reasons for why we go east to west. One is that the east is a lot more populated, and so we have a lot more showers, a lot more food donations. We're a bit spoiled. We hit Illinois, where most of our riders are from, in the first 3 weeks of the ride, and then have the West, where we're used to what we're doing. And we also don't hit the Rocky Mountains in the first week of the ride either. We train up till we get there,
although the
fight our way through the Appalachians for a couple days.
Yeah, the Appalachians are much better.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting.
Thank
you. So do you get a lot of repeat riders from year to year?
No. It is a huge, huge time commitment, and we generally every year have 1 to 2 repeat riders who come back to lead the ride and bring their experience in to run the organization. But last year I was the only repeat rider. This year there are 2. So we have a couple every year, but most people can't afford to give up that much time twice.
And it really, especially as full-time students, it's a huge commitment because we start training and fundraising in October. And the training and fundraising only get more and more intense as the year goes until we start with the summer. And the summer We start 6 days after school ends, and we end about 2 weeks before school starts again. So it's really a full commitment.
Do you all provide your own bikes, or do you have bikes provided?
Yeah. Riders are responsible for buying their own bikes. We are sponsored this year by Trek Bicycle through Champaign Cycle in Champaign, Illinois. And so they give us a good discounts through there, and they also offer us like mechanical classes that everyone can learn how to change flats and how to maintain their bikes and things like that, and teach us about gear, because actually most of the people coming into this organization are not cyclists to begin with. There's generally a couple, but I actually hated bikes before I started this, and then I heard about Illini 4000 at Convocation right before my freshman year started, and I just, wow, that's so cool, I could do that. And so it's kind of how most people come into it. They don't know anything other than, you know, road bike has skinny tires, and then that's how they stay with us. And we try really, really hard to keep our organizational costs low, so unfortunately we can't provide bikes, but we actually were 93% efficient last year with our donations. And that last little bit goes towards making sure that the ride can happen, and that we can have different fundraising events and different Fortress Projects events throughout the school year.
Nice. Well, if it weren't for this, meeting, the board meeting that occurs every July, I'm sure many of us would be. Sure. I wouldn't say that. I think it would be fine if some of the senior administrators went 1 year. General counsel's office would like to be represented, I'm sure. Some others as well.
A portion of the ride.
Yeah. Well, we always have a ride-along event in Chicago every year where we invite family, friends, supporters to ride with us from Chicago up to Deerfield. And we also, last year, started an event where we ride out of Champaign. We always ride into the Alice Campbell Alumni Center there, and then ride out from there in the morning, and we invite people to join us. Anybody would ever like to.
You're getting warmer. Thank you.
Yeah, but we have our website.
That's fun. We're now going to hear from Dean Michael McHale of the Business School here at UIC. Thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to talk a bit about what we're doing at UIC Business. First, I thought a few quick facts. It was an exciting year for us. We ended up being ranked the top undergraduate business program in the city of Chicago by U.S. News and World Report. Our overall ranking put us at the top 15% of accredited schools nationwide, so we were very excited about this. We have approximately 74 faculty, two-thirds of them are tenure track, approximately 70 staff. At this point, we have about 33,000 alumni, the majority of which stay in Chicago. But one interesting group here, we have an increasingly big alumni group, primarily in China. We've got a very successful corporate MBA program that we've run for a number of years. And we're up to 2,800 alumni now, 75% from China. Our enrollment this past fall was approximately 2,300 students. We have a very diverse student body, about half are underrepresented. We have 6 bachelor degree programs that we offer. At the graduate level, we've got slightly more than 800 students, 56% in the MBA program, about 40% in our specialized master's program, with the balance in our PhD program. Our vision is essentially to be a destination of choice. So whether we're talking about undergrad students, grad students, a professional working in the city who wants to continue their education, a faculty member looking for an ideal place to further their research agenda, our objective is to become that place that they choose to come to. And I think the way that we're going to be able to accomplish that is through a number of measures. We've got to have innovative programs for our undergrads so that by spending their 4 years here, they increase their market value substantially. We've got to have the infrastructure and the financial support so that our faculty can conduct cutting-edge research. We've got to engage the city of Chicago, which is something that we're working on doing much better than we have in the past. We need to embed the business community in Chicago within our programs, get more of the folks who are successful to come into the classroom to tell our students what it takes to be successful in the marketplace. And then we need to build on our base of entrepreneurship programs, and like any other institution, financial resources are going to play a key role here. So I'm going to try to follow some of those objectives, talk about some new initiatives and how we're trying to implement them. Some of the things that we're trying to do in the near term is to build scale in our master's programs to improve access, increase the number of companies recruiting here, and also enhance our revenue generation opportunities. So we have the financial resources to put in faculty, to put in scholarships, and so on. We're increasing business options for students outside of CBA. So if your passion is something outside of business, we still want you to be able to build your toolbox so that when you hit the marketplace, you've got some practical skills that employers might like to see. We're working on increasing differentiation for CBA students, and we're also trying to implement some programs to attract the very best students. We've got a huge variance in our student body, and a lot of times we focus a lot of effort to make sure that everybody can get through and graduate. But as many of you know, if you're at the top of the student body and you're not challenged, you're likely to get bored and end up not doing as well as you possibly could.
That was my problem.
Well, you would have liked some of the things we're trying to put in place then. Specifics, we've got a weekend MBA program that we're kicking off the ground this fall. We're expanding our specialized master's programs, especially in accounting and information systems. We're creating an undergraduate minor for non-business students. We're increasing focus on professional development. Now that sounds innocuous enough, but one of the things that I've heard over and over as I've visited various private sector companies, they tell me that our students are hardworking, they're smart, but they're not as polished. They're not as comfortable in a professional environment. And that makes sense because a large number of our students are the first ones in their family to go to college. A large number come from recently immigrated families, and they may not have had the same kind of exposure that many of us would have had around the kitchen table, where they have a parent who's an attorney or working for an accounting firm that can lay out, you know, these are the things you've got to look for, this is what you need to watch out for. So what we're essentially going to do is we're going to try to develop a program to fit on top of our academic program. So throughout the 4 years that a student is here, they pick up a lot of those intangible skills that are so critical for their development and their success in the marketplace. The other thing that we're working on for folks like Chris is this Business Scholars Program. So what we're trying to do here is develop a program for those top achieving students so that when they come to our campus, they're challenged. We're working on new curriculum. We're working on workshops to develop things like leadership, teach them how to lead in teams. A big part of what we're going to do is teach them some responsibility for their community. So even if you're bright and you're getting a business degree, the objective isn't just to go out and generate as much cash as you can for yourself. So we're bringing in a cohort. Our initial objective was to shoot for 40 students. We actually have 44 students coming in. It's a diverse group, so it doesn't look any different from our college. Over half are also part of the Honors College here at UIC. It was interesting because this allowed us to draw a much stronger student. Average ACT scores were about 20% higher than the rest of the college. And that the average ACT score for this group essentially looks like the average student in a Big Ten business school. And so I'm hopeful that they're going to be able to have much better opportunities than what they may have otherwise. About 20% of the students are PAP award recipients, which I think makes a big difference in our ability to be able to attract the students to campus. We've got a number of other programs that we're going to continue to build on and expand. We've got an interdisciplinary product development course where we partner with the College of Engineering and the College of the Arts and Architecture. And it's essentially a course that brings in companies from the outside and has them work with our students to deal with a particular product development problem that they have. This course has been going on a number of years, and I think it's been extremely successful. And one of the best ways to see that is we have companies that come again each year. They feel like they're getting good value. Our students are also getting a very good experience. Another program we're trying to build on is a technology ventures program. This is focused at our MBA students and provides them an opportunity to work with inventors here on campus to take some of the technologies and figure out ways to commercialize them. I think this program fits very nicely with Chancellor Alan Meir's new seed fund, that money that's being set aside to try to take some of the innovation on campus and commercialize it, I think will work well with programs like the Tech Ventures program. On the faculty side, we're basically focusing on two things, building the research infrastructure and providing financial support. On the research infrastructure end of things, we've made significant strides in expanding our research base. So we've got a group of young tenure track faculty coming in this fall that essentially increases our tenure track faculty by close to 20%. So I think by bringing in all of those new ideas, I think it's going to revitalize a lot of our current faculty and help them push their research agendas forward. The other thing that we're doing is we're working on expanding our PhD program. At this point, not every discipline in the College of Business has a PhD program, but as many of you know from experience, having that cohort of PhD students can greatly enhance the research productivity of the faculty. So we hope to have a program in place in the next couple of years for each one of our disciplines. The other thing that we've done is we've set aside some financial resources to provide seed funding for various research initiatives that our faculty might come up with. The idea is to provide startup funds so that if somebody has an idea for a new center, they can get that off the ground and then go to the outside to be able to continue the financial support that's needed. To date, we've funded 7 projects. I highlight a couple of them here. The Center for Healthcare Information Management is focused on figuring out ways to cut the cost of managing the vast information that's out there, especially as we see things like President Obama's healthcare program come into place. We have a farm care innovation group, and what they've done to date is they've focused on how we need to approach patients to make sure that they take their medication. What they found is that a large number of people don't stick to the regimen, and if you're not taking the medication that you need, you generally tend to increase costs substantially. The last thing that we've done and we're going to continue to do is engage the city of Chicago. Our Center for Entrepreneurial Studies runs a small business development center. I think we might be the only one within the city boundaries in Chicago that has a tech innovation entrepreneurship specialty. What this group does is it provides entrepreneurs, and it's not just within the UIC community, but anybody in the city that needs assistance can come. They can get assistance on developing business plans, marketing plans, figuring out ways to get the funding that they may need, and it's been very successful. Over the past year, we've counseled over 400 small businesses, helped them generate almost 300 jobs, and raise a significant amount of equity, debt, and federal funding. So I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
I have one. It's a marvelous presentation, and very happy to hear all of this. When you were talking about the awards given to the projects on the Center for Healthcare Information
right.
Management Systems and PharmaCare, were those done in collaboration with our health sciences colleges?
Right, so both of those teams as well as the other 5 projects were cross-disciplinary. So there are faculty from across campus that are involved. The only commonality across all 7 is that each one includes somebody who's a faculty member in the College of Business. And each one of our departments was represented on at least one of those grants. But they're about as cross-disciplinary as anything I've seen in a business school.
In the graduate program, it looked like there were like 830 students.
Right.
So is that in 2 years, and then is that 2 class years plus?
That's
everyone.
I would look at that as full-time equivalents, because we've got folks who are going to school full-time, and we've got those who might be on a 5-year plan. And so I think that the 810 I would view as a full-time equivalent number. But both the undergrad and the grad programs, I think, are going to increase in size substantially over the next few years.
What's the size of the class in the typical two-year program?
The full-time class might be somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 students within the MBA program. But then we've got a master's in accounting that is a one-year program that's bringing about 90 to 100 students a year. Our information systems program is in flux. The demand for that specialty has increased substantially. So about 3 years ago, we were getting 300 applications. This past year, we got 950 applications, and we're going to add an additional cohort. My guess is that we'll probably see the numbers at both the undergrad and grad level increase by about a third over the next 3 years. Our college is one of the ones that's very tuition dependent, and so for us to be able to meet our objectives, you know, whether it's paying faculty competitively or providing scholarship support, one of the ways for us to do that is to expand the student body. And so that's one of the things we're going to put a lot of effort in the next couple of years.
Micah, just a quick question about the how the students are feeling knowing that they're number one ranked school in Chicago.
Oh, I mean, it was great. So when that happened, we ended up printing shirts for the students. And we had an event where we said, you can come to Douglas Hall, get some free pizza, and get a free shirt. And I think my staff figured we'd get about 80, 90 students coming. And we ended up, I think, with about 650 coming. So we had to reorder that pizza. But it was great, because I think that traditionally, we haven't had as much of a sense of community here. And that's starting to change dramatically. And I think things like this ranking and us acknowledging it and making a big deal about it is giving students a sense of pride where in the past that may not have existed. In the past, you might have heard I'm at UIC because it's cheap or because it's close to home. But now I think we're trying to change that perspective so that people have pride in being here and what they're accomplishing here. Yeah.
You did all that with some really impressive numbers for women and minorities. How did you do that? How did you attract?
Well, I can't really take credit for that since I've only been here a year now. But I think that
well, if you haven't learned how to take credit, then
you're right.
Well, what I will say is, having talked with a lot of the students and a lot of our alumni, I think the College of Business here at UIC is a very welcoming environment. So regardless of what your ethnicity is or what country you came from or what your background is, students, I think, have a very supportive environment for each other. And the word gets out, and I think that brings in students and puts the school on their list. So I think if anybody can take credit for those numbers, it's just the students who are here and how they treat each other.
So you have a bunch of good-looking kids on all your pictures, but if you wanted a middle-aged balding guy of diverse ethnicity who's an alumni, I'm happy to.
The next time you guys have me out here, we'll make sure to put you on the front page. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Larry, will you come up and tell us a little bit about UI Labs?
Chairman Kennedy, President Easter, trustees, it's a pleasure again to provide an update on activities associated with UI Labs. And I think I have a lot of exciting things to share with you today. Next slide, please. Since the last time we talked, we've continued to begin to collaborate and coordinate across the campuses and the administration. And we continue, and I'm pleased that my colleagues, Mitra Dutta and Peter Schiffer are here. They've really done a great job of engaging their faculty and meeting and having bi-monthly meetings with our group to really gather insights. Not on this slide is with Peter and Mitra. We have been engage with the city of Chicago, looking at other companies to recruit Chicago, and I think that's been very exciting, where we can engage and look at where opportunities are, and get build themes with feedback from our faculty. That continues to move on. We're working on developing affiliation agreements with the campuses, and I know that progress is, as much as it's a slow progress, an arduous one, but I think we're making significant roads there. And I'm really very pleased to announce that Tom Farrell, I think Tom's here, and his team have been very helpful, and we have finalized an agreement with the UI Foundation to actually serve as a fiscal sponsor for UI Lab. So I think that, for us, is trying to build family here, has been very successful. Like any legitimate organization, you have to have a website, and when we're up and running on that, and if there is more specific information, I please direct your attention to go there, and if you have questions, please do. You'll also notice at the website we have our own little information regarding what we saw as manufacturing at UI Labs, and so I want to spend a little bit of time sharing with where we are on that. I got the next slide, Joe. I think last time we met, we announced that there was going to be a call for proposals from the Obama administration on what's called NNMI, the National Network for Manufacturing Initiatives. And that announcement came out in May, and there was a call for putting together a letter of intent. And again, working throughout the city of Chicago, over the last couple of years, we've had a number of discussions, and I was very, very proud, pleased that UI Labs was identified by the Chicago community as being that entity that would submit a letter of intent on behalf of the community. And let me just spend a minute talking about the community. As you know, our intent had been to use the UI, as a flagship research technology to really build a stronger community here in the Midwest, particularly in Chicago. And our board and work with Chairman Kennedy and President Easter, we've engaged our colleagues at Northwestern, University of Chicago, Argonne, and we were very pleased when they said that the entity of UI Lab should really represent our community. And the RFP was released at 4 o'clock on Friday, July 5th, and we have a month to put together a concept paper. The funding from the federal government is going to be $70 million, and we have the task of raising $70 million in match, that's cash in a month. It's been a challenge. Our network includes 15 states, 7 of the top 20 colleges of engineering. That includes Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Indiana, Nebraska, Missouri, Kentucky, and that great state of Texas, at UT Texas. Austin has joined our team, so we have a very strong academic team, and I don't want to go into the names of our private sectors, but they are, again, representative, I think, of what we say is the heart and soul of manufacturing in the United States. So we're very excited about that. I think what you'll see here is a call out that, and if you remember when I first began to present the concept of UI Labs, I said it's a changing world, and I think Chancellor Alan Mears spoke to that a little bit earlier today about the world's changing, and we need to be prepared to work and compete in that. And in this call, they actually came out and said that they were looking for funding through independent, not-for-profit institutions to ensure that that public-private partnership would be in a governance model that wouldn't be restricted, if you will, by a single university or property. So we are very well positioned. We did respond, as I said. We are working very diligently with the governor's office, Department of Commerce, Economic Opportunity, World Business Chicago here. I also want to make sure it's clear that this has been, an exciting opportunity working with our Office of Government Relations. As I said, there was a call for proposals on a Friday, and that next Wednesday was an event in Washington, D.C. for people who are interested in responding to the proposal. And in partnership with the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition, UI Labs hosted an event organized by John Pyatt in our Office of Government Relations, where there was we featured the chief of staffs from both Senator Durbin and Kirk's office that we hosted all the universities in the sector. So we had about 100 people at that event, and I think it really showcased the energy that we're building. Continue to put this proposal together and get our $70 million secure. But the final proposal is due in October. And I think it'll be a very dynamic process. Our hope is to bring in again another several partners. And if I sound excited and exhausted, I am. Thank you. Both, yes.
Thank you, Chairman.
Questions?
When do we get the 70 million?
I'm sorry?
When do we get it?
Yeah. Well, it's a match, so we're looking for the 140 plus. So, you know, yeah, so.
But is it a sure thing?
But 70, you know, 70 million matching.
So yeah, well, and 70 million.
You get the 70 million.
I understand, yeah. But we
will be announced the winner, if I understood the Trustee Montgomery's question. We will be announced the winner sometime probably around Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
The proposals are due on October 6th, and we've been assured that we'll be able to have a celebration around Thanksgiving.
Very good. T-shirts.
You've got a lot of positive indications from people.
We is a very broad term here, but have really marketed this as a proposal that's coming from the heartland and the manufacturing sector of the world. And so we have not been shy of saying that this is ours and it's ours, and it's, everyone, please don't even attempt to compete with us. Yeah.
Thank you, Larry. Yep. You know, let us know how we can help.
Well, 70 million. You know.
Be careful, Chris.
Seriously.
Put a blank check across.